Welcome to the Product Podcast by Product School. Here's a preview of today's talk.
So just to review, we've talked about what a product manager does and how that relates to stakeholder management. We have talked about what a stakeholder is. We've talked about why stakeholders are important. We've talked about what stakeholder management is. And then I've given you this framework to think about stakeholders and use carefully. And then definitions of each of those different stakeholders and strategies for how you can interact with each of those different types of stakeholders.
In this podcast, we teach our listeners valuable lessons about product management and transform them into thinking like a product manager. We teach product management, coding, data analytics, and blockchain in 14 campuses worldwide, including San Francisco, New York, and Seattle. You can find more information at productschool.com. Join our Slack community of 25,000 professionals to network and stay tuned for our upcoming events.
My name's Dan Weiss. I am a product manager at Boeing in a group called Digital Transformation Environment just south of here in Bellevue. So tonight's talk is about managing stakeholders, strategies to manage stakeholders. So what I'm going to try to do tonight is I think I'll go for 45 minutes, I think maybe an hour, is I'm going to talk about what a product manager is just so we're baselined on that and sort of what I do as a product manager very quickly. Talk about what a stakeholder is. I'm going to talk about the work of managing stakeholders or stakeholder management. I'm going to talk about why we manage stakeholders. I'm going to give you a framework that I realized in making this presentation I've used for a long time that's really helpful for me, that I hope will be helpful for you. And then I'm going to go through the framework with you and explain. It's a framework to explain different types of stakeholders. So I'm going to explain different sort of variations of stakeholders and then strategies within each of those sections on how I think about and manage those different types of stakeholders. This is just the way that I think about things. Honestly, I'm still growing and developing as a product manager. So just one approach. There's a lot of different great content online. And then I'm going to open it up for questions and then we'll be done. Okay, so the first thing, I just want to baseline people on how I define product management, and it's very close or in line with how Product School defines product management, and generally speaking, how software product management is defined in the software industry. But just so that we sort of are on the same page, product manager works typically on a team with product designers and software developers, sometimes data scientists, to build a software product. Product manager's job is to either define or understand the vision for a product or a suite of products or a business, understand or define the strategy that we're going to use to achieve whatever business outcome we're trying to work towards, and then implement that vision and strategy through what's called a product roadmap and through a lower level of granularity in terms of a product backlog with user stories in it. So that's generally speaking what a product manager does. A product manager's job also is to balance the needs of your end users, the people who are actually consuming or using the software you're building, balance those with or against the needs of the business. So of the people who are paying to build the software, who are looking to get a return on the investment with this software, et cetera. Part of a product manager's job, one of the most difficult part of a product manager's jobs, is this aspect of managing all these different people who are needed oftentimes to build a successful product, and that's the work of managing stakeholders. So I'll go into it more, but that just, I wanted to baseline people on product management. One last thing. So I'm speaking generally from the perspective of an enterprise software development. So it can be B2C or B2B, but I'm talking about business to business or business to consumer or customer. So I'm talking at an enterprise level. It's actually interesting because stakeholder management varies significantly when you're working at a smaller company or a B2C company typically than if you're working B2B, business to business, or in very large enterprises. I find that stakeholder management becomes more complicated and nuanced in larger enterprise organizations. It can be very complicated in sort of smaller or more clear-cut organizations or companies or sort of objectives, but most of the time I think it's a little bit simpler. Okay, so with that, I just wanted to define what a stakeholder is. This is a definition I got online. I'm going to read it. So a stakeholder is a person or a party that has an interest in a product and can either affect or be affected by that product or the business, right? So it's basically someone who's involved. It's someone involved to some extent in the building of this software product. So in reality, it's really anyone who's touching it. And I'm going to give you some examples. It's everything from investors to governments to suppliers, your customers, your end users, operations, subject matter experts, or what oftentimes abbreviated to be SMEs, auditors, compliance, security, quality, architecture. There's, you name it, they're a stakeholder most of the time in some regard. So these are all examples of stakeholders, but the bottom line in a sort of technical sense is that anyone who's touching this piece of software that you are building is considered a stakeholder. Even though people could argue that a designer or a developer who works on your team is not a stakeholder, in reality they are a stakeholder. They're just very closely aligned with what you're trying to do, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, you don't even have to think about them on a daily basis. And I'll get into that in a second. So it sort of begs the questions, well, why are stakeholders important? Well, stakeholders are important because they're going to help you build this successful product, and that if you don't consider these stakeholders, you typically cannot get to where you want to go in building these in a successful product. The other reason that stakeholders are important is because sometimes or a lot of times they pay the bills. They are your boss. They are the person who's giving you political coverage to build this project or the support you need or access to users or things like that. So there's these sort of, they can sort of help and facilitate or be part of building the product, or they can just be fundamental in that if they dropped out, your product would not be able to exist as it does today. Okay. So stakeholder management is the activity of interacting and managing or addressing all the different needs of all these different stakeholders who are involved in either building a successful product or involved in building the product or who are, you know, paying your salary, et cetera. So I like to think about stakeholders and stakeholder management in sort of two veins. There's alignment of stakeholders and there's importance of stakeholders, which I will get to in a second. So alignment means that your goals as a product team, which is typically a product manager, designer, designers, and developer, developers typically. So alignment means that your goals as a product team are the same or beneficial to those of your stakeholders. So alignment is what you're building or doing is going to directly or indirectly solve the stakeholder's problem, comply with the stakeholder's process, or deliver the value that a stakeholder expects or needs. Alignment, I like to think about creating alignment or why alignment occurs in three ways. And I'll get to this later. I just want to introduce it. So there's alignment by force. So this is someone, a stakeholder, doing what needs to be done because they're being told to do it. There's alignment through value. So it's that what my product team is delivering as a solution or functionality is valuable to you as a stakeholder, and therefore we have mutual benefit in working together. And there's a third component of alignment or a way to align, which is in terms of relationships. If I have a really strong personal or professional relationship with a stakeholder, I'm in a position where I can say, hey, friend, can you help me out here? And those are three ways that I like to think about alignment. Now, I also mentioned importance, right? So there's alignment and then there's the importance of stakeholders. Importance is a measure of stakeholders' inherent influence on a product team. I say inherent because a stakeholder's perception of their importance is different than a stakeholder's actual importance to a product team. And when I say inherent, that means that this is their influence or importance to your product team from your eyes as a product manager, not necessarily from theirs. Meaning that, I'll go into this a little bit more, but importance can be inflated, and that can create, I'll show you how with this framework that can create some complications. So it's important to try to recognize inherent importance of a stakeholder and not just sort of what a stakeholder is how they're presenting themselves in terms of importance. What you have to remember as a product manager, or what I remember as a product manager, is that there are times where a stakeholder says to do something and you just have to do it. If the stakeholder is providing the funding for an initiative or for the development of a product and they say do whatever, you can try to align them, show them different perspectives, etc., but at a certain point you just have to do it, right? And maybe as a product manager you have to go on a limb and push that stakeholder a little bit further than maybe you would in a different case. But ultimately, I just want to sort of make that point that typically when stakeholders are important and you can't get them to a point where they see things from a different perspective, you may need to concede your position. And instead of you standing here as a product team, trying to align a stakeholder to you, the stakeholders are over here, you may need to align to them. And that's an important distinction. What I'm going to talk about for the rest of this time is in the situation where you're at least trying or you think you can align them to you. I just want to sort of make that distinction because someone could say, well, if it's your boss, you can do all this stuff, but they could fire you and you're right. In those situations, you have to align to them. Okay, so So with that, there's these four different types of stakeholders on a sort of this grid of important, unimportant, misaligned, or aligned. So I'm going to start in the top right-hand corner with what I call an advocate. So an advocate is an important stakeholder who is aligned. So this is a stakeholder who is your advocate. They're going to go to bat for you. They're going to get more funding for you. They're going to do what you need to do to help you to achieve your outcome in building a software product. The reason typically that this is the case is because of one of the three reasons that I talked about before. If they're aligned, that either means that someone is telling this stakeholder who is important and aligned, someone above them, an executive or whatever it is telling them, do this. Two is that what I'm building as a software team, what I'm building with my software team is going to derive value for them. Or three is that I have a really dang good relationship with this person and we've been friends since childhood and they'll do whatever I need to really help me out, right? But this is why they're in that position, because they're aligned. So that brings me to my next point, which is that these are, as I said, the people who are going to go to bat for you. And while they're supportive of what you're doing now, for either because they're being forced to, you're either providing value to them, or third, because of the relationship, that may not always be the case. So some of the strategies that I would use in this situation is that you want to first understand why it is that this stakeholder is aligned. Are they aligned because someone's telling them to be aligned? Are they aligned because I'm giving them value? Are they aligned because of my relationship? And there's two things you can do in the case to further this advocate's position in terms of stabilizing them and keeping them there. The first is that you can double down on one of the three alignment principles that I've discussed. So if an executive above them is telling them to do this, you can go provide value to the executive or become friends with the executive or do something with the executive or get your boss to talk to the executive to make sure that you stay in good standing to keep this employee, this stakeholder underneath in line. So that's like a doubling down approach. Or if you're providing them value in that, you're making them a lot of money, maybe when you have a decision between the stakeholder who's in this category and a stakeholder who's in another category, maybe you choose to make them even more money or give them even more value so that they're even more inclined to stay in this category. So that's what I call like the double down approach, right? You're sort of furthering the alignment that you already have. The other way that I like to use in this situation is sort of diversifying your alignment. So in the case where I have an advocate who is an advocate because they're deriving value from my product, what I will do is go maybe become friends with the executive or have my manager call their executive, the executive sitting over them, and say, so let's say, I'm just going to give you an example. So let's say my manager is an executive, right? And let's say I have a stakeholder who's a peer to mine who has an executive above them, right? So this stakeholder who's an advocate who sits down here is an advocate because I'm giving them value, I'm providing them value. What I could do is I could ask, and I've done this before, I could ask my manager who's an executive, let's say, to call their manager who's an executive. And my manager would pick up the phone and say, hey, Sally, executive Sally, this stakeholder is doing such a great job with this product engagement. I just wanted to let you know how great of a job they were doing and how appreciative we are of this stakeholder's effort and contribution to our work. Now, typically what happens is that Executive Sally's stakeholder pulls this, Executive Sally pulls this stakeholder into her office and goes, hey, stakeholder, you're doing a fantastic job on this product over here. Keep up the good work. So now what I've done as a product manager is that in addition to providing them value, I've now aligned them further by developing a forced relationship, if you will, in the sense that now this stakeholder, let's say now I go, okay, I'm not going to give them value anymore. They know that their boss, this executive, really likes what they were doing before. So it's not forced in the sense that they're being forced to do something, but they're going to be very strongly incentivized to stay aligned because their boss likes what they're doing. The other way to do this, right, this strategy of furthering alignment is just, I'll give you the relationship perspective, is that, so let's say an executive, I'm a brand new situation. Let's say an executive is making this stakeholder work with my product, align with my product, right? Which isn't a really great alignment strategy because you're forcing someone to do something. Not great management strategy, but let's say it is, right? So to me, I'm like, well, this is an advocate, but high risk. Because if the executive changes their mind or the employee has a bad day, I could really be negatively impacted because they're important, because they have a large stake in the initiative. So in this case, what I can do is go and develop a personal relationship with that stakeholder, right? And now what I've done is I've taken this stakeholder who is being aligned purely by force, and I have a personal relationship with them. And while a personal relationship alone most of the time won't get someone to really move a huge boulder for you, it could help someone hesitate from changing their mind about their advocate position. So that's what I'm talking about when I say doubling down, which is sort of furthering one of those three alignment principles, or expanding that alignment through hitting on one of the other three. Stakeholder management, you need to prioritize how you manage stakeholders. And I'll get to this when I sort of go through them. But the last thing I'll say, and you actually sort of fed right into it, is that the advocate position is one that you probably want to spend time on, but you don't want to spend an absolutely exorbitant amount of time on, because they're already on your side, right? They already are supportive and they're already rah-rah cheering for you, right? And so in this case, now if it's a situation where you're like, they're an advocate, but I don't know if they're a really strong advocate, maybe you want to prioritize them. But in other cases, maybe you say, you know what? Spend a lot of time with them. I'm making them a lot of money or making them look really good. Maybe I want to focus on another stakeholder management category. So I'd say that advocates need to be maintained, and you've always got to be looking for opportunities to give them layups.
If you have enjoyed the episode so far, check out our upcoming live events at productschool.com/events. Use the promo code PRODUCTPODCAST in all caps to get a free ticket to the next event in your city.
Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the next question, which I call supportive. Supportive is unimportant, is unimportant and aligned. So in the supportive, in this situation, these are your cheerleaders, but they really don't have that much impact. They are people who really like what you're doing, but are just not really that relevant or involved. So I've had situations where, so at Boeing, we have a quality organization, which is very important, obviously, for making airplanes. How we build software in my organization is we have a lot of built-in quality. So we do test-driven development, continuous integration, continuous deployment, and pairing. So there's a lot of built-in quality, and there's a lot of incremental checks to ensure that our quality is really good along the way. So the quality organization for us has to do more blanket quality checks and not necessarily such granular quality checks, which is somewhat of a shift for Boeing as a company and this quality organization. So that could be an example where quality is aligned, but not necessarily that important to my product in the sense that I don't necessarily need that quality organization rah-rah advocating, rah-rah, right, you know, with me, selling me on stuff, because we've already had a conversation, which is that quality is built in. They really like how we're building software. And yes, they need to review everything at the end, but on a day-to-day, they're not as relevant. So they're going to be supportive, but in their, they're going to be supportive because they're aligned, but they're just not as important on a daily basis in thinking about building your product. So something that I like to think about here is that this is a category, you never want to ignore any of these, and it is a lot of work. But this is a category where I try to look for easy layups, but less frequently and in a more passive sense. So in this case, I may have a little plan to help the stakeholder look good, or I may really go out of my way to develop a relationship. In this case, anytime I see an opportunity where I can help them out, I do. So an example of that is I was working down in Long Beach on software products, and we had stakeholders who, in my mind, fit into this less, unimportant is really not the right word. It's less important than important if you sort of look at it on a spectrum, and then aligned. And so we were releasing a first iteration of the product. The product was great. It delivered a lot of value to different stakeholders who are up here in different places. I included this stakeholder group in the press release that we sent out to the organization and gave them a big shout out for their support. Right? So I was already writing the press release. We were already releasing the product. The product was in really good shape, but it doesn't hurt me to give them an attaboy, right? And so it helps sort of keep them in this category, keep them where they are, but you don't necessarily need to do it in such an active way. I don't know that I'd write a press release to make them feel good, but if I was writing a press release, why not include them? So you sort of have to keep these things on your mind. Typically, because they're not that important, but they're aligned, they recognize that they're not as central or crucial to a product. And I've seen many times that they stay out of the way a little bit, meaning that maybe at a point they were up here and that we've mitigated sort of their concerns or issues and they're sort of moved down here now to this supportive quadrant. And so they're just a little bit, they're not as present, they're maybe not going to be as involved, they're not as concerned. But again, if there's any opportunity to make them look good or feel good, why not throw it in? Cautious is they are unimportant and misaligned, meaning that they're really not on the same page with what you're trying to do. But it really doesn't matter that much, right? If they disappeared today or yesterday, it wouldn't really matter that much. This is where perception of importance becomes really important. No one likes to be told that they're unimportant, frankly. And the truth is in organizations, as I said before, it's not that they're unimportant. It's just varying levels of important depending on what we're trying to accomplish as a product team. And so in this case, you may deem them as less important, but they may think they are very important, but they're still misaligned. So even if you know they're unimportant, you can't disregard them most of the time, because they become a risk. You see, in these two situations, they're aligned, meaning that by either force, if you will, or influence from someone else, they're aligned. By value delivered, they're aligned. Or by personal relationship, they're aligned. In this case, they have no stake in the product because they're not that important to the product's success, but they're misaligned, meaning they don't have any of the three alignment criteria that I talked about before. So they have nothing to lose. Right? And in these cases, you just have to be careful because they do not have much of an incentive to be nice to you. They don't necessarily have much of an incentive to create a fuss, but if you wrong them or treat them without respect or without or in a way that they do not see as agreeable, they can become a really big problem for your teams. They have no, what's the expression? They have no something in the game. They have no skin in the game, thank you. But they're still around. People have asked me, it's like, well, why is this even a category? But it happens. There's situations where let's say you're working on something really important for your company that's really strategic and is going to make the company a lot of money. And so sometimes you see behaviors where people will sort of cling on to a successful product or sort of try to hang around that product as a means of sort of getting promotion or being seen as doing good work or as being associated with that product. So in that situation, they're sort of hanging on. They're not that important and they're misaligned because maybe they don't think what you're doing is such a great idea, but they don't really care because it's going to make them look good if they can hang on. That could be this type of situation. It's not that people are necessarily malicious, but that's like one situation. There's other situations where honestly someone else is sort of doing what they need to do. So I've worked on products where I've had like one in particular, I had an architect who were working with very closely, a chief architect who knew this system back and forth, provided daily input to our team to help us. And then he had a deputy architect. And this deputy architect, everything that we needed was we were getting from this chief architect. But so this deputy architect was in a position where he didn't really love what we were doing, but he wasn't really that important. So it's like you got to be careful with him. You got to be careful with this quadrant. But ultimately, you have to remember that they're not that important to the success or failure of your engagement. At a certain point in this category, you may find in your product management career that the amount of effort you are spending to just sort of keep them sort of where they are, at bay, becomes very burdensome to your success, to the point where maybe you can't focus on your more important stakeholders, if you will. In that case, depending on your organization, depending on the position you're in, depending on the product you're working on, depending on a million different things, you may need to have a difficult conversation. And so if you need to have a conversation where you have to sit down with this stakeholder or a person who represents a stakeholder group, in those situations, you have to be really careful, but you may need to make this determination. I need to sit down with them and tell them, look, I think that we sort of have what we need to build this successful product. And while I appreciate your contribution, I think that your time might be better spent working on, you know, something else because, you know, we have another architect helping us or something like that. Now, this is dangerous because you can damage, you can hurt or bruise an ego. So depending, you know, I'm talking about a deputy architect, but this could be an executive. This could be someone who really wants to be involved, who really doesn't agree with what's going on, but really has no skin in the game. And in those situations, this conversation becomes very, very political and very, very sensitive and delicate. So in these situations, what I like to do is first is alert my management. So in this situation, if I've gotten to the point where it's like the amount of effort I'm putting in this section is so burdensome that I can't build a successful product, which has happened before, I go typically, and let my management know or the people above me know and say, hey, I'm having a problem, whatever it is, with this person, party, stakeholder, etc. And I sort of think that we're okay without them. What do you think? This gives your management, who's above you, the opportunity to say, no, you're reading the situation wrong. They're actually really important, but they're just misaligned, and you got to do something different, which I'll talk about in a second. Or in this situation, they may say, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that. I trust your judgment. You know, you have my support in making whatever decision you need to make. Be careful. So, or a manager may say, you know what, I'm sorry, let me take care of this, right? So a manager or an executive could take that off your hands as someone above you and you sort of push it up, or they may give you the authority to do this on your own. So if you have to have this difficult conversation, you obviously need to be very careful about how you have it. Make sure you do it consciously. Check with your management. I like you're right. And to be honest, I think the best way to deal with and have these conversations, which I've had to unfortunately have before sometimes, is just to be honest. There's no advantage to you in lying or deceiving them or misleading them in what the conversation is about. The other thing, honestly, is that if you're not honest but polite and careful, obviously, you may have a situation where they don't quite hear the message. They don't quite understand what you're saying, and they may come back in another form or in a different way, and then you have to have the conversation again. So it's better to sort of do it once, make a clean cut if this situation presents itself. I will say that it's relatively rare, and they really have to get to a point where they're incredibly burdensome to your product success, but it does happen. And with higher level executives, et cetera, you'd be surprised by how often it happens. I've seen it at Boeing. I've seen it at other companies I've worked at. Everyone's trying to do the best that they can in trying to help, but sometimes it's just not what's needed in those situations. So it's well intended, and that's why it needs to be done delicately and done in a respectful way, because they're doing their best job. But it may need to be done, and it's a tough conversation you might have to have as a product manager. Okay, the last category I will talk about and give you, I think, more strategies than the other ones is what I call danger. I came up with these names. They probably need to be improved upon over time, but I call this danger because you are in danger. If you have stakeholders who are important to your success, meaning that if they disappear tomorrow, your product would be gone, right? So your money would be pulled, your environment or facilities would be gone, your political support would be gone, etc. If they're important, but they're misaligned, you're in danger. Because who knows what a misaligned stakeholder can do who's important, right? Because any move they make, if they want to, as I said, they're important, so they can have a really, really negative impact on your product success. Even though I think it's easy to be conservative with this stuff, I think that when you're too conservative, it puts you in a position where you spend a lot of time dealing with a lot of these different people that you really don't have the time to spend. And so I think that you do have to take risks in being like, you know what, I think they're unimportant and aligned, and I'm going to keep them there until something bad happens, and then maybe I need to move them to danger, whatever it is. So I guess what I'm saying here is that I've talked to people about this, and they say, well, just assume everyone's important, and then you'll never have this problem because you just deal with them with, you assume they're important and aligned or important and misaligned. The thing is that this danger section requires a tremendous amount of time, tremendous amount of energy, and a tremendous amount of political capital, and finesse. And this advocate position does require time too. So it's if you sort of push everyone or weigh everyone on a more important scale, you're giving yourself a product manager a lot of work, which you really may not have the time to commit to this. I've had comments on sort of these concepts in this danger column, which it's like, well, if they're important, but they're misaligned, right? They're over here, and your product team's over here. Why aren't you just aligning with them? If they're important, why aren't you aligned with them? There are situations where, while someone will be important, there are other stakeholders who are important as well who have very conflicting priorities. And so you can have situations where they're misaligned because you've had to make a decision to sort of go with a different stakeholder's alignment, and now you've misaligned a different stakeholder. Does that make sense? So in this category, you have to act fast and you have to be really careful. Because if you misstep here, you could lose the support for your product, you could lose your funding, your people, you know, the bottom could fall out. So in this situation, I'm going to give you a lot of different strategies. I probably could have done a better job of organizing them, but hopefully they make sense. So the first thing is to understand why they're misaligned or understand why they disagree with what you're doing. Because maybe it's just a misunderstanding, or maybe it's like, right, because always thinking about this force or influence, value and relationship, maybe it's like, oh, I really didn't understand what you wanted. So we're actually much closer to alignment than I really thought. And I can do this something with my product that's small to move you over to the aligned category. So that's one thing is really sitting down and empathizing with them and understand where they're coming from, why they are misaligned. Now, I'm going to give you a bunch of strategies here for how to help them come to your way of thinking or to maybe see things in a different way. I don't think any of these are going to be so crazy, but they've worked really well for me. So fundamentally, I like to pull on concepts from a man named Dale Carnegie, who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People. So Dale Carnegie talks about, I'm going to screw this up, but fundamentally, the strongest relationships, you get people to do what you want, if you will, by showing them how it helps them, by giving them value. So it's the difference between saying, we're going to make a lot of money for the company, instead of, I'm going to make you look really good when we make a lot of money for the company, right? It's these nuanced language shifts from, instead of going from a place of like what I want or my product team needs, to here's how I can benefit you. So all of this, I just want to encapsulate in this concept of, I'm always looking for ways when I have misaligned stakeholders who are important, especially to find ways to give them value quickly. Because to me, the most sustainable and the most effective alignment strategy of the three, this influence/force, value, or relationship, is deriving value. This executive, you must do it, or I really like what you're doing, so keep doing it, force strategy can work for a period of time, but people can get sick of it and sort of go and rebel and be a rogue and do their own thing, and that can create a lot of problems. And a relationship, while you can develop a really strong personal relationship, at a certain point, it just breaks down. Because ultimately, most of the time, people are going to do what's in their best interest, not necessarily what's best for a relationship, because people do what's best for them. Everyone does what's best for them. It's sort of human nature. Okay, so I'm always trying to think about ways to deliver value to them. So if you sit down and understand what they need, where they're coming from, there's sometimes really easy ways to help them move. Maybe it's just a simple thing like, I'm not getting any recognition for all the work we're doing, you know, and it's ridiculous that all these other people are looking good, and they would probably say it in different language, and that I'm a huge stakeholder here. I'm giving you all your money, but I'm not looking good, right? So it's like, oh, okay, maybe I need to do something to make sure that they feel recognized. Or it's something like, you know, I find most of the time in large organizations that it's not such drastic differences between misaligned and aligned in this category. I find that there's sort of nuanced things you can do to help them move in the direction of aligned, and maybe they're always important and a little bit misaligned, but they're close enough because you're giving them enough value, right? So if they're like all the way over here, if you will, and you like move them over here, you've done a good day's work. Okay, so how to help them see things from a different perspective. So one strategy I used, and actually a team I worked with used recently, is using information that's derived from something else other than your personal opinion. So let me give you an example. We have product managers working on a very strategic engagement for Boeing as a company. It's so important that there are a lot of people who need to be involved and who truly do have a stake in this product. The thing is, though, is that these product managers, there's two of them working on the product, are so busy managing all the stakeholders and making sure that every stakeholder is sort of appeased and is deriving value from the work they're doing, that they have almost no time with their developers and designers to actually build the product. So So these product managers are left in a situation, their teams are left in a situation where they can't progress in building a product because they're trying to understand the value they need to deliver from all these different stakeholders. So to this sort of first or one of my suggestions, if these product managers went to their stakeholders and said, hey, I'm having a really hard time helping my developers and designers understand the product-y parts of the product because I'm in meetings with you. The stakeholder may not respond that well to that. Well, you're not managing your time properly. It's not my problem you're not doing your job well. Hell, stay late, whatever it is, okay? And I've seen that at many different companies in different situations, consulting, et cetera. However, those product managers instead did the following. They on the board in their in the area where their team's developing software, they put up a poster that says help !! I need a PM. PM short for product manager. And every time a designer or a developer needed support from a product manager, but didn't have it because the product managers were away dealing with other things, they put a tick mark on this sheet of paper on the wall with a Sharpie. And after a week or 2 weeks, there's a lot of tick marks on here because the product managers are very absent on a regular basis. So what these product managers do, instead of going into the stakeholder meeting and saying, hey, I'm using up most of my time during the day on meetings with you, I need to be with the product team, and it's really hurting our ability to deliver value to you, they came in with the sheet. And they said, They said, just wanted to let you know that we're trying to build a software product for you and we're on a really tight deadline per sort of what you need in terms of value. And this is the amount of times that we've been unavailable for our developers and designers to answer questions, which is slowing down our development for the solution that you need. Are there ways that we can work together to reduce these tick marks over time? That's a very different conversation. You're coming in with fact, but it's not a person-to-person attack. It's not saying, you stakeholder, sorry, I'm looking at you, you stakeholder are causing me delays in my time. It's saying, we ran a little experiment, and what we found is that we're spending a lot of time in these meetings, and it could be helpful for us if we reduce that amount of time. The beauty of this example is that every week or 2 weeks, whatever increment, you can count up how many times help I need a product manager and try to see if there's a trend downward or upward, and now you sort of have a metric that you can iterate on, right? You can try different things. Maybe we need, et cetera. But so in this situation, I've taken the situation from a place where I, as an individual or employee, am talking to this important stakeholder and telling them they're doing something wrong to a point where I'm just showing you the information. You can argue with the ticks on the sheet of paper all you want, but like these are the amount of times this week, right? And so it becomes much more. It just changes the dynamic of the conversation, and it's not as aggressive. It doesn't put stakeholders in a defensive position. They go, oh well, let me help you solve that problem instead. And now you've gotten stakeholders to see things from a different perspective. You've influence their behavior to help themselves, frankly, and to help you. So that's one strategy I use, which is fundamentally to not talk from a point of your perspective, but to talk from a point of information or data qualitative, examples or whatever it is. That's one example I've used that's been very helpful. The other thing is that sometimes stakeholders don't really know what's going on. They're sort of in the dark. They haven't been looped in properly. They just have not been pulled in. Even though they're important, believe it or not, they're just not that in the know about things. And sometimes it's simply a matter of just educating those stakeholders, explaining what we're trying to do. Hey, here's the roadmap. So in quarter one, we're going to work on stakeholder A's stuff and really help derive value for them. But quarter B, that's your quarter. So let's have a conversation about what we can do in quarter two, for you. Sorry, I was saying stakeholder A, stakeholder B, quarter one, quarter two. So in that situation, it's just a matter of education or a conversation in the sense that quarter one, we're doing what's good for stakeholder A, quarter two, we're doing what's good for you, stakeholder B. Right? And now they're like, okay, well, I have to be patient, but I will get everything I want in quarter two. And now you've taken a, so now they're going to be really rah-rah about getting everything done quickly in quarter one, so you can start the stuff for quarter two earlier than expected, right? But now you've taken a stakeholder from misaligned, who is very dangerous to your product success, and move them to an advocate position where they're maybe now trying to help you get the quarter one stuff done. Another tactic I use to try to help stakeholders see things from a different perspective or help them come to my way of thinking is by using an approach in my body, by changing and varying my approach in my body language, my tonality, my verbiage, my sentence structure, etc. So it takes a little bit of practice. I'm very loud typically, can be a little intense, or you know, it's a lot. I can be a lot, right? But so with certain stakeholders who are misaligned and important, that approach may not work. If let's say it's a really important stakeholder who's misaligned, who's been beaten down by other organizations and keeps getting pushed down in priorities, an aggressive, excited, energetic personality coming into a meeting with them might not work so well. It may work well for them, but it might not work so well. What might work instead is coming in and sitting down sort of quietly and softly and saying, hi, how are you doing today? You know, how are things going? And maybe letting them vent a little bit and maybe really turning on the empathy so that they sort of have an opportunity to explain where how things are, get more comfortable with you, but take this softer approach. You know, bringing vulnerability into the equation can be very helpful too in these situations. And I don't see it as manipulative, and I hope it's not seen that way. I just see it as behaving in a slightly different way that's within the realm of my ability as a person to try to come to a place where me and this stakeholder can agree and derive mutual benefit from our work together. None of this is malicious or manipulative or Machiavellian. It's just that we all need to work together to accomplish this, and sometimes we're being juxtaposed with each other, forced in two different directions. And let's not let that get between us. Let's just have a conversation, try to figure out a way to make this work. So in this situation, maybe that sort of more empathetic, softer, more delicate, maybe it'll take a few, maybe a month or 2 months, and really just a softer, slower approach may work. And in those situations, maybe you know, being vulnerable, you know, letting this stakeholder know, you know, I've been actually struggling with some different stakeholders too and some of the challenges, but being vulnerable there can also create this rapport that maybe gets stakeholders to a different place or more receptive to what you're talking about. Now, on the other hand, there's times where a more confident, loud, in-your-face approach can be very effective. If you have stakeholders who are misaligned and important, and maybe they're being misaligned because there's a lot of different voices coming at them, maybe they need a really soft approach to sort of contrast from all those loud voices. Maybe they need an even louder voice to tell them which is the right way to do things. And so in those situations, coming in, being confident, I know what I'm doing, trust me, I'm going to make sure that what you need done is done in quarter two. We've got this controlled. I've done this before. That approach may work better in certain situations. But so varying your approach and your strategy and how you interact with these different people can have a big impact on whether you can move them from misaligned to aligned. Another tactic I use is one that comes from human psychology, which is that when you make a concession, the recipient of that concession is more likely to reciprocate a concession. So, if alignment means this over here, and misalignment means this over here, if I say, I can totally see where you're coming from, let me do this, I'm going to move here for you, and they're still over here, they're now more psychologically inclined to go, let me move here. So maybe you don't get fully aligned or fully aligned, but you've gotten more aligned than you were before. And this concept of this use of concessions is psychologically beneficial, but it's also good in the sense that it shows goodwill. It shows that I see where you're coming from. Let me help you. Let me do something that is not, frankly, in my best interest, but that helps you. would you be willing to do something that's maybe not an ideal situation for you, but that helps me? And that can work in different situations. A really great way to move people who are important and misaligned, and I honestly think maybe the best way to move people who are misaligned and important to important and aligned, is by delivering value to them. So I've been in situations where I've had a stakeholder who's misaligned and important. And if you have a product team who can build software fast or get through a feature really quickly, you can maybe, do something that creates even further misalignment or keeps you misaligned. But when you get to the point, when you get to the point where you've delivered the software, delivered the feature, it delivers a lot of value to this misaligned stakeholder. So it's sort of like they don't quite see it. It wasn't maybe so apparent to them, and maybe it was difficult for you to communicate. But in the end, you gave them a lot of value really quickly. That's a really great way to align a misaligned stakeholder. If they're making money, if they're looking good, this going back to Dale Carnegie, just fundamentally, but think about it in terms of deriving, of providing value to them through the delivery of the software product. So another tactic, which is brute force, and I would not recommend on a regular basis. If you have a misaligned stakeholder who's important, and you have another stakeholder who's more important and of equal importance who's an advocate, and you as a product team have looked at your user research, have looked at the pain points, the market you're in, the strategy and the vision, and made a determination that where you are aligned and who you are aligned with is a good move for the company, you may sometimes need to escalate. If you've tried a lot of different tactics here and you cannot get your stakeholder to move from misaligned to aligned, you may need to escalate to create that alignment through force. So that could be escalating to your executive, and then that executive sort of goes across to another executive and sort of forces alignment on that stakeholder or individual. While this can be effective, it's most of the time a one and done. If you're the impetus for this alignment, for this them getting in line, if you will, you're not going to be their friend most of the time when they find out that it was you. And you're probably not going to have much goodwill moving forward. However, there are times as a product manager where one and done is fine. If there's some sort of compliance check or gate or something like that, that it's like, when I've looked at this, there's no other way that I can do this than brute force, then making a calculated decision to use brute force to your advantage may be beneficial. But recognize that it's not a great way to do things, because things come back around and it's just not a great way to develop goodwill or a relationship. It's much better to find a way to deliver value to them than sort of force them into a line through hierarchy. We talked about alignment in these three different ways. You can obviously always create, we can always create relationships. If you develop a personal relationship, it might not get someone who's really misaligned to really aligned, but it maybe can move the needle just enough for you to get the product out to market or whatever it is to deliver some other type of value. So don't underestimate the value of personal relationships. Just recognize that in the professional world, relationships can be built off of mutual benefit for each other. And those are very, very successful relationships for two or however many individuals involved. But just having a rapport, getting to know someone, can help move the needle in terms of alignment. The last thing that I'm going to wrap up here is that you can use, it's getting them involved. So if they're misaligned and important, so they're this danger position, there's sometimes places where you as a product manager have done something before or know you can do it yourself, but in asking this misaligned stakeholder to help you with it, you develop this rapport in a different way. And what you do is when you ask them to help you with something, you get them involved. You get their, now they have skin in the game to some extent. So I've had situations where I've sort of escalated things up to ask for a favor across organizations. And then a misaligned stakeholder is in a position where it's advantageous for them to sort of pretend like they're aligned. But once you pretend you're aligned, let's say, and you've done it in, let's say, a public forum, now you're considered aligned. And so now it looks bad to sort of go back. But it's also that getting, you know, if they're really misaligned, they really disagree with what you're doing, how you're doing it, what you're doing, where you're going, why you're doing it, et cetera, it could be good to hey, why don't you come down to the area where we're building software? Why don't you come talk to the team? Why don't you see what we're working on? Let me give you a demo. Let me have a developer come and talk to you about our code base or whatever it is. And that's one way, is that if you get them involved, especially if you can have them do something on your behalf or on behalf of the product, they're now much more inclined to move from misaligned to aligned.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. If you want to know more about our courses and next course, visit productschool.com. Stay tuned for the next episode to learn more about the secrets in product management.